For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. In Nashville, Tennessee, I'm the professor, Matt Perkins. And joining us from just across the Harpeth River, it's our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton.
Well, if I'm the offensive coordinator, Matt, what does that make you? You're, quality control?
Oh, yeah, I'm absolutely
on quality control. Offensive analyst?
Offensive quality control.
There you go. Good title for you, Matt.
Amen. I do what I can.
And I'm fired up, man. We got a chance to make history this week against the Hunters Lane Warriors for the first time in school history since Hillwood was built back in 1950, I think. This will be the first time that Hillwood has been in the playoffs three consecutive seasons.
All right. Well, I know you guys got a good shot there tomorrow night. But we'd be remiss if we didn't introduce the third amigo in the second city, a man who knows that mid-October means midweek maction. It's our intrepid blogger from Big Ten and Counting, Josh Cook.
Yeah, the MAC race has kind of been the calm before the storm right now. I'm expecting a race to the finish like that league normally has.
I was going to say, well, I mean, I don't know if I'd call that seven overtime game very calm.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the one bright spot so far. It's been a little bit of ho-hum play.
That's very true, very true. Well, speaking of ho-hum play, not the strongest slate of games this week, guys. But that does not mean that there aren't lots of intriguing matchups and storylines from across the country. So we're going to get started with some quick slants. Josh, you're up first.
So admittedly, my second slant is way too long, so this first one is going to be way too short. And that is South Alabama. They upset San Diego State last year and upset them the previous year. Well, they're at it again on Wednesday night. They went to Troy, the team that beat LSU, and upset them 19-8. The Sun Belt race is just an absolute logjam right now. It'll be fun to see the second half of the season for the Sun Belt.
Yeah, Fun Belt definitely living up to the name, definitely more so than the MAC so far. Coach, you got a couple. I think you're actually going to start, though, here on Old Rocky Top.
Yeah, I'm going to start on Old Rocky Top. Before I get into that, though, I was scrolling through my Twitter this morning, getting some breakfast, and I saw the story about this high school, Barrow High School. It's the northernmost high school in the United States. During football season, they have 65 days straight of darkness, and it never gets above zero for the game time temperature. And their stadium, if you go back and look at my tweet, at Coach Burton 36 from this morning, their football field, their stadium is literally on a slip of land that sticks out into the Arctic Ocean. I thought that was pretty cool. So you guys should check that out. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you play there. I told my head coach we should schedule them for a home and home.
I think you guys might not have the travel expenses for that one.
Yeah, well, I think we're a little short, but let's we need to raise a few more dollars.
But maybe, guys, if you go there, we're going with you, Coach. Do a show on site.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Got to. We might even do a video podcast, a vodcast. Ooh. Yeah.
I don't know if it's dark the whole time. No one's going to be able to see us.
Well, I teach broadcasting in high school. I can bring some light kits.
All right.
So anyway, let's get on to the more important stuff here. What's going on Rocky Top since the bye week? So since we last spoke to you, there's been a whole lot of drama on Rocky Top. A lot of it rumors, a lot of it hearsay. But when you have that much smoke, there's got to be some fire somewhere. So it started with Butch Jones getting accused of having a DUI. And then the story came out that he did, in fact, drink. And he did, in fact, get caught by the police. But the police drove him home and said, don't drink and drive. I don't know how much of this is true. I got a huge grain of salt. Right here in front of me here. I'll even take a bite of this grain of salt just so you know. Watch.
That's a big old grain of salt.
I know. That's how big of a grain of salt you should have when you listen to this, all this stuff that's happening on Rocky Top. So starts with that. Then, Butch Jones lied about the fight between Shy Tuttle and another recruit. And then, it's crazy, man. There's been some other practice fights. I mean, he's just really just losing control of that locker room. Recruits are starting to jump ship, and everything's just starting to unravel around Rocky Top. And, you have fights daily in practice. You have a quarterback that supposedly quit, cleaned out his locker in Quentin Dormandy, since being replaced by old Jared Guantano.
I always want to call him Guantanamo.
I know. I do.
Can we just call him Gitmo from here on out?
I'm good with that.
Okay.
I'm good with that. But this is a make or break game for Tennessee. They take on South Carolina at old Rocky Top. They still got a 3-2 record. They're 0-2 in conference. There's still a lot of goals out in front of them, so the season is not totally lost. But the way they've been playing, I find it hard for them to kind of recover. And the way things are going for Butch Jones and the kids really buying into what he's selling, I think they're starting to kind of sniff his BS. But, I mean, there's just been like all kind of fighting and recruits jumping ship left and right. You know there's something wrong when that stuff is happening. But
definitely.
So let me pose this question to you. If Tennessee loses to South Carolina on Saturday at 11 a.m. Central Time, should or will it's a two-part question there. Will or should Butch Jones be fired?
Josh, I'll let you take that one first.
Will he be fired? I think that's a tall order to give an interim coach the trip to Alabama as their first game. So I would say probably no, he won't be fired. Should he be fired? Yeah, the marriage is over, and it's just a matter of when, not if.
Yeah, I'm with Josh on this one. He absolutely should be, but I don't think it's going to happen this weekend, especially not. I mean, they've got Alabama coming into town next weekend. Can you imagine throwing an interim head coach in his first game into playing Alabama? I mean,
It's in Tuscaloosa too. It's not even.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's no. I can't see that happening. As bad as things are with Butch Jones, I mean, can you imagine whoever their, I don't know, defensive coordinator, offensive quality control assistant, whoever would be the interim, going in to Tuscaloosa for his first game? No, absolutely not. So I don't think they can him. I think that they need Alabama to, beat the brains out of them the following week. And he will be, if he's not fired by Black Monday, he will be fired on Black Monday if he makes it through the regular season. Because, I mean, this team at this point, probably not making a bowl game. I mean, they might, but, it's not going to matter. He's not last. You will not see him on the sidelines in that hideous shade of orange in 2018.
So let me ask you this. There's another variable that gets thrown into the mix here. the NCAA approved the early signing period. So does that have any influence?
No. This marriage is so sour at this point that I don't think it's going to matter.
Well, I'm talking about, does it have any influence for them to pull the trigger sooner?
Well, I don't think they're going to be able to hire their full-time guy until sort of all of, you know, the chips fall with other schools that are going to be, you know, firing coaches and everything like that. That happens in mid to late November.
Yeah. I mean,
who are they going to hire? I mean, are they going to hire like Les Miles midseason? I don't think he would do that.
I'm hearing they're going to back a truck up with $7 million and dump it onto Chip Kelly's front stoop.
I don't think that seems like a terrible marriage right there. I don't see that working at all.
I don't either, but that's what they're all thinking. Or well, Gruden. They're going to pull Gruden out of the Monday Night Football booth.
Like that'll happen. Gruden's got a good gig going, talking Spider 2 Why Banana every Monday night. He's not going back to coaching. He's definitely not going back to the grind of college football.
I don't think he was ever in the grind of college football.
That's a pipe dream, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Well, speaking of a two-loss team in Tennessee, I was trying to figure out, guys, who is the best two-loss team in the country at, you know, the midpoint in the season that we are so far. So I have a top six that I'm pretty confident in. I had, you know, seven, eight, nine other schools that I considered that I threw out for one reason or another. Just quickly, the nine others that I considered. West Virginia, you know, ooh, they – but unfortunately for them, their best win is at Kansas, and they're 105th in the country in total defense, so they're out of there. Kansas State's best win is versus Baylor at home, and that's only by 13 points. So, sorry, you're out. Oregon, best win, they beat Cal by 21 points at home. That's not bad, but they've lost their last two games, and the quarterback's out for the year. So, I can only see them trending downward. South Carolina, you know, they have a very good win against an NC State squad to open the year, but they had Debo Samuel then, not now.
They're banged up.
Yeah, they're banged up. They've, you know, they lost to Kentucky by 10, and they're 106th in the country in total offense. They're out. LSU, they have their best win is at Florida, but they have the worst loss of all the contenders to this two-loss crown in their home loss 24-21 to Troy. They also got trounced by another team I was considering in Mississippi State. Florida, their best win is against that Tennessee squad that coach has talked about, but they lost in ugly fashion to Michigan in a neutral site game 33-17, and they're 102nd in the country in total offense. They're out. UCLA, their best win is a one-point ridiculous comeback against Texas A&M in the first week of the season. But since then, they've lost both at Memphis and at Stanford.
Their defense will never hold up.
And their defense is horrendous. In fact, they are 124th in the country in total defense, so they're out. Mississippi State, they've got a strong FPI. They've got a great win on their resume versus LSU, 37-7. But their last two games, they have been absolutely slaughtered by UGA and Auburn by a combined score of 80-13. So, sorry, Nick Fitzgerald and company, you're out. Wake Forest, they have a solid FPI at 33rd. Their best win is they won at Boston College, let's say 34-10. Lost versus Florida State 26-19. But they don't really move the needle a whole lot. They got a solid defense, but that's about it. So, my top six, in no particular order. We will start with Louisville. Their FPI, this is according to ESPN, they are 26th in the country in the Football Power Index. Their best win, surprisingly, is against Purdue in a 35-28 affair to open the season. Their two losses were both by, you know, significant margins. They lost by 26 points to Clemson at home and by 14 on the road at NC State. However, they are fifth in total offense and 41st in total defense, both very respectable numbers, and 21st in strength of schedule. Team number two is Texas. Texas has an FPI of 24, so two spots better than Louisville. Their best win so far this year is home in two overtimes versus Kansas State, 40-34. And they have, but their worst loss opened the season, 51-41 versus Maryland. But that is a very different Maryland team than it is now. Obviously, Maryland's down to, I think, their 11th string quarterback, who's also the water boy. And, you know, they also lost that two overtime thriller at USC. Texas is 33rd in total offense, 42nd in total defense, and they're the 17th in strength of schedule. So Texas, very solid all around. And along with TCU, the only two remaining unbeaten teams in conference play in the Big 12. Iowa State, coming off of the best win of any of these contenders for the two-loss crown so far. Obviously, their win at Oklahoma last weekend, 38-31, is you know, the best win on the board. But they do have losses to the aforementioned Texas at home, 17-7, and the next team I'm going to talk about, Iowa, at home in overtime, 44-41. Iowa State, 59th in total offense, 83rd in total defense, 24th in strength of schedule. So, you know, middle of the road at best in both of those categories. Iowa, their FPI is 32. Their best win is against Iowa State, 44-41. Their two losses or by a combined 9 points, 17-10 at Michigan State, 21-19 at home versus Penn State. So nothing to sneer at there. Unfortunately for the Hawks, they're 98th in the country in total offense and 69th in total defense. So not in the top half of either of those categories. They are 25th in strength of schedule, though. Stanford. Their FPI is the highest of any of the team with two losses at 15. Their best win so far is a 23-20 win at Utah last week. You know, their two losses were an 18-point beating by at USC and their 3-point loss at San Diego State. They're, despite Bryce Love's huge numbers, they are only 42nd in the country in total offense, and they're 101st in total defense, which, as far as I'm concerned, goes down with a red mark next to their name. But, however, they do have the most difficult strength of schedule in ninth. Finally, Texas A&M. They're 33rd in the FPI. Their best win is 50-43 over Arkansas. Their worst loss is definitely that massive comeback by aforementioned UCLA. They also fought valiantly against Alabama last week, but ended up losing 27-19. They are 55th in the country in total offense, 63rd in total defense, and 32nd strongest schedule. So I know who I think out of those sort of last six teams is the best two-loss team in the country, but I'm curious as to what you guys think. Josh?
I mean, I've got Stanford in my poll. I think they're kind of starting to get things together, especially if they pick a quarterback, like I stressed in the wrap-up show. But Bryce Love, just individual talent, is so incredible that it's hard not to like Stanford.
Coach?
Well, here's what I think. And I was kind of going through each of the strengths of these teams and whether I think they could hold up. And to be honest with you, I mean, if you lined up these six teams and put them in a playoff scenario, honestly, I think A&M would come out on top. Yeah, I think despite some of their struggles on defense, I think they're probably the most complete team out of these because Kellen Mond is really starting to kind of catch some steam. You know, you have Trey Williams as your running back, and your defense is playing good enough. See, I think Louisville's a one-man show. Texas is still – I think they still got a ways to go. They're not there yet. Iowa State, I think, is just – they're good. They play well together. But, again, I think they're kind of in the same boat as Texas. I don't think they're quite there yet. Stanford is a one-man show with Bryce Love. Louisville is a one-man show with Lamar Jackson. And so, I mean, that kind of just leaves you with Texas A&M.
So, before I did this before I came in and did this, you know, sort of scientifically, I originally thought that it was going to be. I thought it was going to be Stanford. That's what I, you know, I thought I was going to be, you know, looking at Stanford and saying, okay, this is the best two lost team. But after running all the numbers, I was surprised. You know, I thought about what Corey said over there with Texas A&M, but I'm actually going to go with Texas. I think that Texas has improved every single week. And this week, especially with the Red River Shootout, they've got, you know, big things coming, obviously, and their defense has improved every single week. I think they've sort of moved beyond the quarterback controversy between Shane Buechele and Sam Ehlinger. It's Ehlinger's team now to run, and I think he's a better fit for what Tom Herman wants to do. And I think at this point, if, you know, like Coach said, if you're putting them in a bracket, I would take the Longhorns. So, Josh, I know your second slant, you're looking at a little Division II and Division III.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a slow weekend here in FBS, and since we are a college football show, we look at all levels at least once or twice through the season. I thought this would be a good time to do a midpoint recap. In D2, Northwest Missouri State has won three of the last four national titles, is at it again. They are 6-0 and the unanimous number one in the D2 coaches poll. A team they beat for a title a couple years ago, Shepherd, is nipping at their heels at second. Minnesota State, a team that lost.
Josh, hold on. Sorry, I didn't interrupt. Where is Shepherd? Yeah, I've never heard of Shepherd.
You've never heard of the Shepherd Rams, my friend?
No, the only Rams I'm familiar with in college football are Colorado State.
They are in West Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Sweet. Thank you.
No problem. Yeah. So they are second in the country. Minnesota State, a team that lost the title game in 2014 to Cal State Pueblo, the only team to snap this streak that Missouri State is on. Northwest Missouri State, I should stress. Both of them are also highly ranked. So kind of business as usual in D2. Over there in D3, Mary Hardin Baylor and Wisconsin Oshkosh were the title game a year ago. We're so used to Mount Union and Wisconsin Whitewater year in, year out with a really good program in Minnesota called St. Thomas, also sniffing around. We're used to the 1A, 1B of Mount Union Whitewater with St. Thomas as a close second. New blood last year, and both of them are playing well again. Oshkosh third in the country, Mary Hardin Baylor, the defending champion, first in the country, but Mount Union, they're right at it again, second in the country. That pesky St. Thomas team, fifth in the country. Whitewater, not quite the same since Lance Leopold left. They are currently receiving votes, but a whole slew of games I'm going to blow through real quick. So tonight, second-ranked Shepherd took their 5-0 mark to Fairmont State, who was 4-2. That game was a really good one. I was actually watching it on mute. I had it streaming on my computer. Shepherd escaped with a 28-23 victory. Fairmont got down to the Shepherd's 17-yard line before that drive stalling late in the game. Also tonight, 18th-ranked Sioux Falls is at Wayne State. As we're recording this, Sioux Falls is all over Wayne, 24-7. But a big slate of games on Saturday in D2. 24th-ranked Wingate travels to Catawba, who is receiving votes. These two clubs are a combined 10-1 on the year. We got the Battle of the Wests when 23rd-ranked West Alabama hosts 22nd-ranked West Georgia. Both are 5-1. But West Georgia already has a loss in the Gulf South Conference. So they really need to find a way to steal one against West Alabama, who's 4-0 in league. 21st-ranked Delta State is coming off a rough 30-17-point loss that cost them 12 spots in the ranking. They try to regroup at 4-1 West Florida. 6-0 and 14th-ranked Bowie State heads to Petersburg, Virginia to take on Virginia State, a 5-0 club receiving votes. 8th-ranked Fort Hays State hosts 5-1 Washburn, another team receiving votes in a big mid-America game with both trying to keep pace with that defending national champ and unanimous number one Northwest Missouri State. 4th-ranked Minnesota State Mankato, a team that you and I know well, Matt, from our collegiate hockey days.
WCHA power.
Yeah, they head to Iowa's only Division II program to take on the Peacocks of Upper Iowa. So let's go UIU and pull off the upset. And the headliner out of all these D2, D3 games, ninth-ranked Slippery Rock hosts third-ranked Indiana of Pennsylvania. Each team is 6-0 on the year, 5-0 in the Pennsylvania State Athletic Conference. This is such a big regular season game in the D2 that it is on ESPN3. So I highly suggest checking it out, stream it on your phone while you're watching some of the other games. And then down in D3, quick shout out to 5-0, 20th ranked Wartburg up there in Waverly, Iowa, just north of where the UNI Panthers play. Iowa doesn't have a great Division III history in football, so well done for Wartburg to have a hot start in the season. But fourth ranked North Central goes to Wheaton College, who was 18th a week ago, but after a defensive battle against Illinois Wesleyan went against them and dropped them to 4-2. They are now just receiving votes and out of the top 25, trying to get things back on track against a top five team. Third ranked, UW Oshkosh has a nasty road trip to rival and seventh ranked UW Platteville. Both are undefeated and both have legit national title aspirations. And finally, an interesting game that I'm going to ask you something about, Matt. Framingham State, they are 5-0 and they head to Plymouth State. Framingham is receiving votes and Plymouth isn't, but they are a combined 10-1 on the year. And both are leading the Massachusetts State Collegiate Athletic Conference. But I got a question, Matt.
Yep.
Plymouth, New Hampshire, where in the world is that related to where you are from up there in Hanover?
Well, funny you should ask. I actually have a couple of friends from my high school who played at Plymouth State. Plymouth is about an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes northeast of Hanover, in the Lakes region of New Hampshire, near Lake, right on Lake Winnipesaukee, actually. Fun fact, in, I believe it was 1998, 1999, thereabouts, Plymouth, New Hampshire won the Pop Warner national title.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that that class at Plymouth High School was undefeated in their 4 years,
nice.
Winning four straight state championships. They were a division above ours, but we played them in the preseason every year because our head coach was very good friends with their head coach. And they had their offensive cadence is probably something I will never forget. my high school ran a 4-4 defense, and their quarterback would come up to the line and he'd go, four down, set out one. And that was their cadence for every time. Or if you were going against a 5-3, he'd be 5-3 down, set out one. And wow. It was very strange, but it was very effective. They've had many a player star at the University of New Hampshire, at Plymouth State, at some of the other schools around. But yeah, actually Plymouth, when it comes to New Hampshire football, is one of the powerhouses. So, at least at the high school level, and their college team has always been, very respectable. Also an outstanding lacrosse program there. Shout out to the Broush family, who have like half their family.
Yeah, that was a deep cut. That was not a quick slant. That was a deep cut.
Yeah, I like that. I gotta say, I like that. I like that deep cut a lot. Coach, you got a quick run here through the SEC.
Yeah, judging from Josh's quick slant that he actually turned into a deep post. he ran 10 yards and then made his break instead of three steps. Break flat.
I was on the same page as everyone else. I was improvising.
Quarterback just threw a pick six.
Also, Josh, well, I'm glad you were able to get shout outs to at least two Iowa schools in there and a New Hampshire school. Always, always nice to hear.
I also got West Georgia. Coach, yeah. Where are they? Where's West Georgia?
It's in Carrollton. It's literally probably 15 miles from the border. I've been to West Georgia more times than I can count. That was kind of like my secondary party destination. A good friend of mine, Matt, you probably met him at my wedding. I used to go down there and visit him at West Georgia and hang with him and his buddies. And, man, we would get toe up. So, anyway.
I imagine there's not a whole lot else to do in Carrollton, Georgia.
There's really not, honestly. It's really not. West Georgia used to use the Carrollton High School's stadium for their stadium. So they've come a long way, though. They've since built their own stadium, so they're rolling.
Yeah.
So, Josh, you've inspired me to take a look at one of the lower divisions, so I'm going to do that real quick. And then I'm going to take a look at the SEC and then try to decide
so you're,
which.
So you're doing both and looking at the SEC East.
Yes. yeah, this pretty much is the SEC East. The Southern Conference of FCS, Division II of NJIA, has some pretty interesting matchups. It's really been kind of a slugfest in this conference. Wofford and the SoCon, man. Yeah, absolutely. Wofford is absolutely dominating. They're 5-0, 3-0 in conference. They take on the Citadel. That game kicks off at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time and will promptly end at 5:15 Central Standard Time. Two option teams going toe-to-toe. I went to a football clinic at Wofford a few years ago. And the offensive coordinator started his session at 8 o'clock, and about 11 o'clock rolls around, and he is still going, and still going, still going. 11:30, still going strong, and he is just talking the entire time. Coaches are just getting up and leaving, and then eventually, I think he still might be sitting there in that room talking. So that was pretty interesting. But the Citadel sitting at 3-2, they look to be a formidable opponent there. Western Carolina takes on host East Tennessee State. Western Carolina hoping to get some good fortune. They are 2-1 in conference, so they're nipping at Wofford's heels. All right, then Mercer hosts University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, struggling right now, 1-5 overall. The Mocs are struggling, man. But Mercer, 3-3, right there at 500. They're playing some pretty good football. Furman, the same. They're 2-1 in conference. The Paladins are hosting VMI. VMI is 0-4. They're 0-6, 0-3 in conference. Not a good look for VMI, but some interesting SoCon games. Mercer is one of those up-and-coming teams that they haven't really been around all that long. Their program hadn't really been around all that long, but that's probably one of the most interesting teams in the Southern Conference. And then Wofford, for whatever reason, they have the equivalent of a high school team, talent-wise, but they go and kick everybody's butt. So pretty impressive from Wofford. I knew they'd probably get their due there. So that's a look around the Southern Conference.
Okay, so then quick question for you, Coach. Wofford and the Citadel, two top teams in the SoCon, they're going at it this weekend. How many teams in the SEC East could those guys beat?
They could definitely beat Tennessee.
Yep.
They could probably beat definitely beat Missouri.
Yep.
Give
I think Kentucky and Vandy would be a good game for both of those teams.
Yeah. Kentucky would give them hell for about three quarters, and then that would be it.
Yep.
And then Missouri, of course, would get their heads kicked in. And Vandy would also – they would give Vandy hell for about 2.5 quarters, and then Vandy would just take over. But speaking of undercards, the fourth-ranked Bulldogs – look to stay undefeated and on their war path of destruction when they host Missouri, 1-4, Missouri Tigers.
Coach, over under 10 minutes left in the third quarter before the starters are pulled.
I'm going to say third quarter. They're going to do something in the game that they screw up on, and Kirby gets mad at them, and he leaves them in. So that'll happen. Then BYU takes on Mississippi State. Mississippi State looking to break their slump.
BYU's a good team to do that against because, let's face it, they're awful.
So they'll get back in rhythm there. Again, the aforementioned South Carolina traveling to Knoxville to take on old Rocky Top. This game could probably put South Carolina on a good trajectory. To really elevate their status as one of those two lost teams and maybe break into professors' rankings. I don't know. It depends on how much of a beatdown they put on Tennessee.
Yeah.
Auburn takes on LSU. I'll give you my 2 cents on that one later. Vandy at Ole Miss. That should be a get back on track type game for Vandy. So yeah, I'm looking forward
for their first actually, conference Corey, win.
I'm good. And I think Vandy's going to get it.
Corey, there's a movie on.
And so that was our other live studio audience. You didn't know that, did you?
No, we did not. Well, I think there are a lot of fans out there who would rather watch a movie than watch some of this SEC East football right now.
No kidding. And my aforementioned king of the two-loss teams, Texas A&M, travels to the swamp to take on Florida. Side note on Florida, I saw some Twitter pictures, and I hope they're not real, of these uniforms that they're unveiling.
Oh, they are very real. They are very real.
Oh, no. No. They went the other way. They did not listen to us on the podcast. They're the most...
Actually, Josh, I have a question for you on this Texas A&M Florida game. How on earth is Florida favored? Florida's
at home.
I don't understand.
They're at home. That's good for a 3-point favorite when everything's
equal.
Yeah,
but their two top receivers are out. Their best quarterback is out. Like,
The bottom line is we use spreads to like. Quickly evaluate teams, but the Vegas doesn't do it based on that. They do it based on what's going to make them
on public perception. Yeah.
Yeah. So by doing it that way, they know they could get a whole bunch of money for A&M coming in and move that spread to like one, make it almost even. And then people will go, oh, well, Florida's at home. Let's bet Florida.
Yeah. You're trying to get equal action on both sides, but still that's,
yeah.
I think if you're a gambling man, I think that's easy money on Texas A&M.
Yeah. I think Trevion Williams is going to have a freaking field day. And Kellen Mond is finally going to catch a really good groove. And you're going to start to see this. I think they've done a good job of not hitting the panic button. Everyone else around them had. And that's ultimately going to save Kevin Sumlin. I think we're looking at the possibility of if he gives the West a run for their money, that Kevin Sumlin might be able to save his job.
Well, it was funny. Actually, I read a report today that said that Penn State is bracing for Texas A&M to make a run at James Franklin after they fire Kevin Sumlin.
Yeah. It just depends on how they finish the season out, really. And it starts with this game in Florida. If they go out and lay an egg against Florida, someone's cooked.
Yeah,
this is a make or break game for someone. I know that sounds weird to say, a road game in conference, but this is a game that they need to win because Florida's struggling bad.
Yeah,
this is a game that can send Florida to a tailspin too.
You know, yeah, absolutely. Arkansas, Alabama.
Ooh. Bielema, his goose is cooked. Alabama's favored by 31. Oof. That might be a little light.
Yeah,
this is gonna be bad for Arkansas. I think it's gonna be Jerry Jones on line one. He's got $5.9 million to throw at Bielema. So yeah, that one's gonna be ugly, especially at Alabama.
All right. Well, we got to get to my final slant. I'm going to make it quick. I got, you guys have both talked a little non-FBS football. I'm going to continue the pattern here. I've two FCS games that I am pumped about. The first of these is when the number 8 Youngstown State Penguins, Pelini's Penguins, they're heading up. They're hosting number 2 North Dakota State in Stambaugh Stadium in Youngstown. Youngstown coming off a really tough defeat last week against 6th-ranked South Dakota. They lost 31-28. They were losing 28-14 at halftime. They tied the game at 28 in the fourth quarter. South Dakota puts home a 29-yard field goal with seven seconds remaining to beat Pelini's Penguins. And, you know, it just the road does not get any easier, though, this week. The Penguins have lost their last 5 matchups against the Bison, that, unstoppable force that is the Bison. In you know, coming into this game, a couple things to worry about if you are a Penguin is that your starting quarterback, Hunter Wells, is not 100%. And he is far, far superior to his backup, Nathan Mays. While their defense, has been, very, very good over the past couple of seasons, ever since Pliny got there, they got lit up last week by Chris Streveler, who I talked about in my preview last week in South Dakota. Streveler had himself a huge game. North Dakota State, also a little banged up themselves. Their top two running backs have torn ACLs so far this season. So they are down to their third stringer. And the Bison are a team that likes to run the ball, especially a team that likes to hand out carries to a lot of guys. But they still have Easton Stick at the helm. And he is an absolute beast. He has stood up very well in his second season after replacing Carson Wentz. He has yet to turn the ball over this season, and he is looking great. So I'm going to expect the Bison to come on down to Youngstown and take advantage of a Youngstown State team that has, is a really tough schedule right now, a tough stretch. North Dakota State, they're not as tested. They've only really played one good team at all this year, and that's Eastern Washington, who they played in the second week of the season. Since then, they've been basically, they've had the bottom part of the Missouri Valley and a couple non-conference games that they just pretty much rolled over their opponents. But you still got to like North Dakota State in this one. My other game is James Madison versus Villanova. Guys, ESPN Game Day is going to be at the game for this one. And that should be a lot of fun. So we've got the number one, James Madison.
They should do it inside the Palestra.
Ooh, yeah, that would be fun. We've got, number 11, Nova is hosting, number one, James Madison. We've got, kickoff 3:30 Eastern, and it is, gonna be a fun one. At this point in the season, James Madison scoring 42 points per game, and they've got almost 520 yards of total offense per game, which means that is top five in the country. Villanova very strong on defense, as is James Madison. Both teams allowing under 15 points per game, but I think the real sort of test here is going to be Villanova's rush defense versus James Madison rush offense. Part of the reason that James Madison is so good is that they've got a bunch of guys who can really, really rush the ball. Trey Sharp, Marcus Marshall are both running the ball at will. Both are getting right around 6 yards per carry. They've got their quarterback, Brian Shore, has been very good so far this year. He's got completing 69% of his passes for over 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns. But he has thrown 5 picks. So if Villanova can capitalize on some turnovers, they're going to be that will give them a chance. However, for them, their starting quarterback Zach Benarsik left their last game against Towson. Two games ago against Towson, did not play last week against Maine, and they don't know if he's going to be able to go this weekend. They're also going to be without starting running back Matt Gudzik and starting tight end Ryan Bell. So, and that is not a recipe for success against James Madison. So I'm expecting James Madison again to win this one. I know it's I'm taking the, top two ranked teams on the road here, but it's going to be a lot of fun, guys. So, I'm glad that we all got to sort of talk a little bit, non-FBS football this week. That was very fun. It's time for our pop quiz. So gentlemen, get your pencils out, get your Scantrons ready. And today's question is, there have been 28 seasons in college football history where a player has rushed for more than 2,000 yards. One player has done it twice. So with that in mind, starting with you, Josh, name these 27 players.
Well, I'll go with the easiest one first, I would say. Barry Sanders.
Barry Sanders, the record holder, 2,628 yards.
All right. Another softball, considering that he has over 5,000 career yards in 3 years, I'm going to have to go with Herschel Walker.
Walker.
Sorry, that is incorrect. Herschel Walker never ran for 2,000 yards in a single season. It's your one strike, coach.
How did he get all those yards in 3 years if he never rushed for 2,000?
That's an average of 1,700 a season for 5,000. So,
oh.
All right, Josh.
So Barry had the single season, and Dane had the career, and the career record was just beaten by a guy who I'm pretty sure had 2,000 yards at least once, if not twice. That is Donnell Pumphrey over there at SDSU.
Donnell Pumphrey in his final season last year did have 2,000 yards. And you also mentioned Ron Dane in that, who was the only person to do it twice.
No.
In 96 to 99.
Oh. Okay. I'm going to have to say LaDainian Tomlinson.
LaDainian Tomlinson, 2,000, ran for 2,158 yards for TCU.
So then I just think about being a Badger alum, as we just have a lot of wells to go to. So I'll go with the current LA/San Diego Community Credit Union Charger, Melvin Gordon.
That is correct. Number two in history, 2,587 yards.
Ooh. I'm going to have to go with Marcus Allen.
Marcus Allen, number four all time, 1981, 2,342 yards.
Mm.
Josh.
All right. I believe we had someone do it just last season down there at Texas, Mr. Foreman.
That is correct. Deonta Foreman, in addition to Donald Pumphrey, who you also already said, were the two players to do it last year. Deonta Foreman, 2,028 yards last season, going with Pumphrey, 2,133.
Yes.
Coach. Nice. I'm going to have to go with the Pony Express and say Eric Dickerson.
I'm sorry, Coach. Eric Dickerson did not. You are out. Josh, can you name any others?
I can name some people that would be on my list.
Okay, go for it.
So I'm pretty sure the year he won the Heisman, Ricky Williams went over 2,000.
That is correct. 1998, Ricky Williams, 2,124 yards.
Nice. I'm almost positive Dorsett with Pitt in like the mid-70s.
1976, yeah. Tony Dorsett, 2,150 yards.
Next, my next guess would have been he's still running on Iowa in the Rose Bowl. That's Christian McCaffrey.
Christian McCaffrey is correct. In that Rose Bowl season, 2,019 yards.
I was going to say what's his name? Mike Rozier from Nebraska.
Mike Rozier is correct. Nice. 1983, 2,148 yards.
Nice.
Larry Johnson at Penn State.
Grandmama, that is also correct. in 2002, ran for 2,087 yards.
Nice.
What in the elevator girlfriend beater upper? Pretty close, and I think it was 2006 or 7. Ray Rice.
2007, Ray Rice, 2,012 yards.
Nice. My last guess was going to be know him well because he ran all over Iowa a couple times, even though I don't know if Iowa State ever won either of those games. But one of the most overlooked back, Troy Davis?
Troy Davis, yes. And actually, he actually did it twice. I was wrong.
2 years in a row.
2 years in a row, 95 and 96.
Yeah, he was odd.
Matt Forte. I looked it up now.
Yeah, Matt Forte in 2007. Let me just go the guys you missed.
Did Darren Sproles ever do it?
He did not. So the guys you missed.
I think Tommy Frazier did it in one game against Florida.
After he finished directing Clerks, Kevin Smith ran for 2,567 yards for UCF in 2007. Derrick Henry in 2015. Andre Williams at Boston College 2013.
What? Boston College had offense recently?
Yeah. It's
wait, how many yards does he have?
He had 2,177.
So that probably means BC on the year had 2,000 even yards total. The rest of the offense lost 177 yards.
Sounds about right. Donald Brown at Connecticut in 2008.
Okay, I'm sorry. Who the hell is Donald Brown?
He got drafted by the Colts. He played. He had a cup of coffee in the NFL.
Oh, Donald Brown. Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Lorenzo White from Michigan State in 86. Byron Hansbard from Texas Tech in 96, 2,084 yards.
What? Who are these people?
I don't know.
Rashad Salam, Heisman Trophy winner.
In 94 at Colorado. Damien Anderson from Northwestern in 2000. Charles White.
Damien Anderson. Yeah, he was a good back.
Charles White at USC in 1979. Josh, recently another Big Ten back, Tevin Coleman at Indiana. Same year as Melvin Gordon outshined him. He had 2,036 yards. Yeah. J.J. Arrington at Cal in 2004 at 2018.
What happened to J.J. Arrington?
I don't know. He was drafted by the Cardinals, and I thought he was going to be great, and he flamed out fast. Anyway, that is the list. Josh,
you... These Iowa State unis are pretty sick, by the way. Troy Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Josh, you win that round of trivia. Well done, sir.
That's a two-game streak.
Yes,
Hey, I'm looking at this. I'm looking at, I think it's on, I forget what, I don't know what this website is, but I looked it up and they have pictures. And for Ron Dayne, they have what looks to be like a punter or maybe the quarterback running the ball. It's not even Ron Dayne. It's like the skinny white guy.
Yeah, that's not Ron Dayne. Ron Dayne was bigger than half the offensive line.
Yeah.
So
it's a skinny white guy. Who looks scared shitless right now.
That's awesome. That's hilarious.
So we're going to start. We're finally into our deep.
There's Ron.
More than an hour into the show. We're going to start in the ACC where the Ramblin' Wreck of Georgia Tech and one heck of an engineer, they are heading down to the U, 4-0 Miami, off to their best start in a long time under alumnus Coach Mark Richt. Malik Rozier led the Canes to a phenomenal last second drive to beat the Noles last week. Josh, do you think that they will be able on defense to adjust to Georgia Tech's option attack?
That is a great question because Miami really hadn't played anybody until Florida State, and Florida State put up over 200 rushing yards on them. Cam Akers, 20 carries, 121. Jacques Patrick, 91 carries. That'd be a day. 91 yards on just 11 carries. So if Tech's option game can take advantage of what is maybe not as good a rush defense as we initially had expected, then yeah, they got a shot. What I'm curious though is speaking about defense. Georgia Tech's defensive numbers right now, number one in total defense, number four in pass defense, and number three, tied with Wisconsin, in rush defense. But they play Jacksonville State, Pittsburgh, and UNC in their good defensive games. So are they what we saw against Tennessee defensively, or are they in a defensive groove? Because if they are a repeat performance like they had against Tennessee defensively, they're going to get shredded.
Coach, Miami's top running back, Mark Walton, is now out for the year. Do you think they'll be able to fill in for him down there in South Florida?
Yeah, I think they've recruited well enough. I'm a believer in what Miami's brought to the table. I mean, you know, what really makes me feel good about this game is that Mark Richt usually has had a great plan against, you know, against these guys. You know, he owns Georgia Tech, so you'll see a good plan there. Mark Walton is a huge piece of that offense, don't get me wrong, but I think he'll have a solution. He'll find a way to get Malik Rozier more involved in the game, ease his new running backs in, whoever those guys might be. It'll be kind of a running back by committee type deal, but I think you're going to see just a more open offense against Georgia Tech and really just be able to shred that defense. So, I think you'll see the defense more of what played against Tennessee than more of what played against UNC, because I think UNC was more about UNC not playing well and less about Georgia Tech dominating. So
it sounds like both you guys are picking the Canes in this one.
Yeah, I with Mark Richt's overall record against Georgia Tech, he's faced them 16 times, won 14 of those contests between his time at Georgia and his time now at Miami. So, or his 1 year at Miami. So, you know, I have no worries in the world. I mean, Tech's a great team. They finally got their offense rolling, but I just don't think it's going to be enough, to be honest.
Josh, you with Coach on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think Georgia Tech is probably as good a competition as banged up Florida State is. That's probably about their ceiling. And Miami, after struggling, did get going in that game.
Georgia Tech can't win a shootout. They won't. And that's what Miami's going to do. They're going to turn this game into a shootout.
My only concern would be sort of a letdown game after a big emotional win over Florida State. They hadn't beaten Florida State in 9 years. So, but you know, I know you really believe in Richt there, Coach. So I'm gonna trust your gut, especially when it comes to playing Georgia Tech.
You know, I would take this as an upset special if it was one of those ACC Thursday night games in Atlanta. But you know, Saturday full week. I think Richt to those guys.
It was originally slated to be a Thursday night game. It had to be postponed.
Yeah, I think Richt and those guys just kind of smell the ACC title game.
All right. Well, next we are going to head to the hometown of Walker, Texas Ranger. It is Dallas, Texas. It's going to be a hot one there on Saturday for the Red River Shootout. We have Oklahoma reeling after their stunning defeat at home to the Cyclones of Iowa State last week. Texas team coming in looking stronger by the week. You know, they've won their last two games, including beating that Iowa State team in Ames, as well as Kansas State last week at home in double overtime, I should say. So, Josh, who are you going to give the upper hand to here?
So here's something I pretty much always do with Oklahoma. I always pick them against Oklahoma State. I always pick them against top teams in the Big 12. And I always pick them against Texas. And more often than not, it's worked out. Oklahoma is notorious for tripping up and getting a random upset, but they're pretty reliable in these games. They've already blown out Ohio State in Columbus. Let's not forget that. Everyone was panicking about their defense, and rightly so. They haven't been playing great defense, but they're 38th in the country in total defense. That's one behind Texas, and they've had a lot harder schedule up until now than Texas has. And Texas still got pretty beat up by Maryland. They had a slot fest against Iowa State. They could have lost at home in overtime at any point to Kansas State. Oklahoma is just better. I know both of you guys are high on Texas and you're probably going to pick Texas, but when Oklahoma wins this game by like 3 touchdowns, I'll be telling I told you so on Sunday.
Coach?
Not so fast, Josh. Now, I'm pretty high on Texas, but I ain't that high. I think they still got a ways to go. I think Oklahoma's going to be extremely pissed off in this game. I think it'll be a little bit closer than it originally was going to be at the beginning of the year when Texas was struggling. This is one of those games where you throw the records out the window and you just go and play it. And you know, like I said, this game reminds me, or like Josh said, this game reminds me actually of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, where in recent history, Oklahoma has owned Texas, give or take a few years, where Texas gets up there and beats them. It's the same way with Georgia, Florida. It don't matter how good Georgia's playing. They roll into Jacksonville. It's a struggle. And it's going to be that way for Texas. And yeah, they're going to have their chances. But I just think that Oklahoma's going to lock up. They're going to be laser focused for this game. They were probably already preparing for Texas. But a little fun fact here. This is the first time since 1947 that this game has featured new head coaches on both sides in the same season.
Ooh, I like that little fun fact. I heard, you know, after years of Big Game Bob, I heard someone call him Little Game Lincoln, and I don't know if I don't know how I feel about that. You know, I might be high on Texas, but I have not been.
I have not been spoken
the good stuff then, because I'm not that high on Texas.
No,
because as impressive as they've been, they've looked better the last couple weeks.
They're not there yet.
They gave up 34 points to Kansas State, and Kansas State does not have an offense you're going to write home about. You're not going to bounce your grandchildren on your knees telling about that time you saw Kansas State. I saw Kansas State in person this season against Vanderbilt.
They've improved every week, but they ain't there yet.
Oklahoma is going to come out
there yet.
And I think that you're going to see Baker Mayfield throw for 5 touchdowns in this game. This is going to be Baker's second Heisman moment of the season after that Ohio State game. The spread is 9. Oklahoma's favored by 9. And I love Oklahoma here. That's a bigger number than I would like. But I like Oklahoma by 2 scores at least. So our next game, we're going to the adopted favorite conference of the Illegal Motion Podcast, the American Athletic Association, where we have a doozy, gentlemen, number 25, Navy, 5-0, coming in to Memphis at the Liberty Bowl to take on the 4-1 Memphis squad, who absolutely obliterated UConn last week. Riley Ferguson has been one of the most impressive passers in the country all year at the quarterback position, but Navy's quarterback has been one of the best rushers in the country. Zach Abey already has 870 yards and 9 touchdowns. So obviously a huge contrast in styles here, Josh. Who do you see winning out?
Man, I like what Navy has done this year, starting 5-0 and getting ranked, but they haven't played a Power 5 team. Their best win is probably a 2-point victory over Tulane. That's the only team they've faced so far with a winning record. So it's been a pretty soft schedule, and they still have 3-point win, a 2-point win, couple 10-point wins. Like, they're not impressing me that much, other than their always awesome triple option. This game just feels like a bad matchup when you look at Navy weakness and Memphis's strength. So you mentioned Riley Ferguson, that passing attack 15th in the country for Memphis. Navy is 72nd in yards per game passing defense, giving up 226.8 on
that average. Gonna go up after this week.
Yeah, and part of the reason why Navy's giving up that much is they're not getting very much of a push. They are tied with such notable teams as UAB, Bowling Green, Oregon State, and others at 103rd in the country with just 7 sacks through 5 games.
Hey, don't sleep on UAB. They're having a pretty darn good season in their first season back. I think there's a chance that UAB makes a bowl this year.
You don't want to be tied at 103.
You don't want to be tied with Bowling Green or anything, because they are awful.
Or Oregon State.
No, absolutely not. Coach, what do you like here?
Man, I think it's going to be very entertaining football, I think. Riley Ferguson is going to put on a show. Navy is going to put on a show with their option attack, and they just do it so clean and efficient. And I mean, who needs a passing game when you got such a potent offensive attack with the option? But what I like about this the most, though, is Memphis's defense. You said they were 15th overall in total defense.
And they're 15th in passing attack.
Passing attack. Okay.
They're like they're like 111 defense.
So the thing I'd be concerned about here is that Memphis defense, because, you know, the way I see it, you know, Memphis is going to put up points in bunches, but their offense is, you know, such a quick strike attack between Riley Ferguson and Anthony Miller, who's become one of my favorite receivers in the country, the former walk-on, already has 516 yards and 7 scores this season. You know, they're going to score quick. So, and, you know, the option attack eats a lot of clock. Memphis defense is going to be out on the field for a long time. I expect Navy to have, you know, to, you know, push 40 minutes or more of possession time. And so that would be my biggest concern if I was a Tiger fan, like a friend of the show, Ashley Croft.
Yeah, Ashley Croft. Shout out to Ashley Croft. But no, it's gonna come down to the benches, honestly. It's gonna come down to the depth. Is Navy deeper than Memphis? I don't think they are. I think Memphis's just ability to, again, strike very quickly. I think that's a demoralizing factor when you grind out all these 15 play drives and you score, then Memphis just gets it two plays and man, they're off and running. And I think their defense will feed off of that. If they can just kind of get some momentum going offensively, if they get a couple touchdown leads, their defense might feed off of it and make a few big plays and really just cause Navy to panic. You know, that's got to be their goal. That's got to be their mission. So we'll see if they can do that. I think it'll be interesting to see, A, who has the best depth, B, which offense can create their best defense, which is odd to say, but, you know, sometimes your quick strike offense can be your best defense because it demoralizes the other team and forces them out of their game plan and into your hands.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
We'll see what happens there and how they're able to do that. I don't know how I misunderstood Josh's stat when I was trying to rack my brain around it. Like, this doesn't make sense.
No, yeah.
What the hell is he smoking?
Well, I don't know.
So you've been hanging out with the Dolphins offensive line coach or something?
Oh gosh, I hope not.
The heck, man.
Well, sticking in group of five, we're going to head out to the Mountain West now, where, for my money, the best group of five team, the San Diego State Aztecs, are hosting perennial power Boise State, who is off to a little shaky start this year. They're only 3-2, including that loss to upstart Virginia. But, you know, Boise State, you can never, ever underestimate them. But San Diego State does have the best player in that game, and that is Rashad Penny, Josh. After Bryce Love, I think he might be the second best back in the country.
Yeah, I love this game. This is actually the game I'm most excited for outside of Wisconsin and Purdue, quite frankly. This game's going to get all my attention on Saturday. And, you know, the first thing I looked at was rush defense for Boise State, and they were 19th in the country. And I'm like, oh, wow, like, that's way better than I would have guessed. Well, then I decided I'll see what they did against their Power 5 teams, because San Diego State is almost as good as a Power 5 team. In fact, they're a lot better than...
I was going to say, they're a lot better than most Power 5 teams.
Yeah, I mean, they're one hell of a ball club. And
I'll take them over Missouri.
Yeah. Washington State only put up 22 rush yards against Boise State. So it was like,
Washington State probably only rushed the ball 4 times.
They ran it 27 times. So I was like, an outlier. Well, what did Virginia do? Virginia a lot better, 167. So I think it's fair to say that Boise State's rush defense is a little inflated right now. San Diego State has the opposite problem. They're 35th in rush defense, which is pretty damn good when you consider they gave up 174 to Stanford. A lot of that was Bryce Love. And then they also had to play Air Force, an option team that put up 220 rushing yards. Mm-hmm. So against normal teams, San Diego State's defense is playing really well against the rush. And I think that favors San Diego State, because there's been kind of a common theme right now for Boise State's struggle, and that's in games where they get woefully out of balance. For instance, in that Virginia game, they had 30 rushing yards. They're just not getting enough out of their passing game to afford being that one-dimensional. I think San Diego State locks them down in that running game, makes Boise State's day kind of miserable. I love San Diego State. I think they're a machine. Boise State just has taking a little bit of a step back. I look at a lot of their coaching. Right now, I don't think Harrison is as good as their previous regime, obviously, with Peterson. So I'm going to go with the Aztecs. Even though Boise State's never an easy out, I love the Aztecs, especially at home.
I think the steam has officially left Boise State. I think their run of national prominence, or as much of it as you can possibly have at Boise State, I think it's pretty much done. I think recruits are starting to see options elsewhere. I think the new favorite group of five school is San Diego State. I think a lot of recruits are starting to kind of go there now instead of Boise. Let's face it, San Diego has slightly better weather than Boise. They have a history of putting running backs in the league. I don't know if you ever heard of this guy, Marshall Faulk.
Yeah, he was okay.
He was decent, right? You know, they had a 2,000-yard rusher last year, Donnell Pumphrey. You guys have ever heard of him? But they're starting to kind of recruit the way Boise State was recruiting in the late 2000s, right before the turn of the decade there, 2010 and beyond. I think you're starting to see San Diego State really just start to kind of rise to prominence. And I think if there's any school in that conference that has a chance at a Pac-12 bid or a Power 5 bid, it would be – I don't know if the Pac-12 will look to expand, but if they do, I think San Diego State gets a legitimate look. I don't know how they are academically.
They have a solid basketball team too. So
yeah, I don't know what they're like academically, because I think that was what was holding Boise State back from the Pac-12.
Please, the Big 12 has West Virginia.
I said Pac-12.
I know, but the Big 12. Well, I mean, the Pac-12 has 40. UCLA. I mean,
hey now.
They have Arizona State. The girls there can't read, but they are hot,
and it doesn't matter.
No, and it does not matter. So all that to say that I think San Diego State absolutely pummels Boise.
All right.
I think it's going to be Rashad Penny. I think it's not even going to be close.
Well, tell you, like, the thing about these two teams and kind of the shift of power is San Diego State has an identity. And we preach identity a lot of times on this show. But I feel like I think it's even that more important for Group of Five teams, because they need to recruit players that fit their scheme, not like Alabama where they just compile a ton of five-star kids and then just kind of figure it out in camp. Like, San Diego State needs to identify the 2 and 3 and the occasional four-star kid that fits their scheme. And San Diego State, we know what they have. Great defense, great running attack. Just enough passing game to keep you a little off balance. Like, Rocky Long has been riding that since 2011 and has 3 conference titles. Boise State, they had Chris Peterson. We knew what you're getting. They had a really hard-hitting defense. They had so much team speed.
You know what they were? They were the college version of the New England Patriots, where they had all 5 receivers were under 6 foot and could run.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were versatile, and they were super versatile.
And I just don't see an identity for Boise State.
I think that's a really good observation there, Josh.
They always had a running back that could keep you honest, but was never really their go-to guy, and that was, mm-hmm. you know, and the most premier guy at that was Doug Martin.
Yep, muscle hamster.
And now he's coaching South Carolina.
Ha! In basketball?
Yeah.
Who knew? Well, finally, our nightcap. We've mentioned them a couple times already. Stanford, they are hosting a beat-up Oregon squad on the farm in Stanford Stadium. 11 p.m. Eastern kick. Obviously, you know, when it comes to talking Stanford, the first couple talking points are Bryce Love, Bryce Love, Bryce Love, Bryce Love, and Bryce Love. But, you know, besides that, they've had a little bit of some quarterback issues there at Stanford. Josh, do you think they've actually settled on a guy yet?
Well, I think they need to figure it out, because despite all those injuries, believe it or not, Oregon is playing some rush defense. They are 10th in the country giving up just 93 yards per game.
Yeah, and they should thank Colorado because they stole Jim Leavitt, and that is that is the entire reason that's happening.
And against I know it was a long game, but against Washington State, they held them to 85 rushing yards, and Washington State tried to get the run game going. They had 25 carries in that game. I don't think Oregon has the offense due to all the injuries to take advantage of their good defense in this game. But if there's going to be an upset, it's going to be because Washington, or excuse me, Stanford gets zero from that passing game. They got to figure out what they're doing under center. And I would honestly go with Costello. I think he's just the more consistent of the two from what I've seen.
Yeah, Keller Chris is nothing if not inconsistent. So, you know, Coach, obviously Oregon has been, you know, really bitten by the injury bug. You know, obviously Justin Herbert is out. And I didn't, you know, their starting tailback out there is been banged up as well.
Yeah, a lot of people are banged up. I think they've got, you know, they've probably got one of the most injury-riddled teams in all of Power 5, maybe even in all of college football. But, you know, anytime you have to rely on a fifth-year senior who couldn't crack the starting lineup or a true freshman that has never really seen football at that speed, anytime you have to rely on that as your quarterback position, you're kind of in trouble. You know, if a fifth-year senior can't step in there and be the definite starter, you've got issues at that position, especially when the guy you're competing with threw two interceptions and lost a fumble against Washington State last week. You got issues, and it's going to be tough sledding for Oregon. They've got to find their way. They've got to figure out some razzle-dazzle something. I don't know exactly what they're going to do. They're going to struggle, I think. I think Stanford's just going to sit back, let them screw up and take advantage of it. Bryce Love is going to have a huge day for the Cardinal. It's not really going to matter what they do in the passing game. I think Oregon's going to have three or four turnovers in this one, and that's kind of how I see it playing out. If Oregon wants a chance to win this game, I think they have to play nearly flawlessly, and their defense is going to have to take advantage of maybe a struggling passing game and maybe try to win the turnover battle with a couple of interceptions and really force Stanford into being super one-dimensional because they have to be, not because they want to be. And I the way I predict it is that Stanford will be one-dimensional because they can, not because they have to be.
All right. Well, we were going to head to spread formations, but Josh mentioned that the game he's, besides that San Diego State game, is that he's going to be keeping his eye on is the Wisconsin-Purdue matchup. So, Josh, I wonder if you had any quick thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue's just played way better than anyone would have expected. Wisconsin has been sleepwalking every now and then. Their defense has been very, very reliable. Their offense, I think, is what's causing some of the sleepwalking. So I'm just curious to see how well Purdue does against another top 10 team. The last time they faced the top 10 team was Michigan a couple weeks ago, lost by 18. It wasn't quite the same as how they looked against Missouri and Ohio, things like that. But Purdue's a nice looking team, and I'm just curious to see how long they can hang around with Wisconsin. I think the Badgers ultimately win it. Probably ultimately win pretty close to that spread at about 17 points. But I'm very curious to see if Purdue can maybe have it tied at halftime, maybe even a narrow lead at halftime, things like that. That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, now, definitely.
Purdue just doesn't have the depth yet to really compete with Wisconsin.
No.
And that's not a knock on Purdue. They're just not there yet. You know, I think Hazel did a horrendous job of recruiting personally. And they just don't have the guys. They don't have the dudes.
No.
And, you know, they're going to give them hell. You're going to see it the first quarter, you're like, well, hey, okay, all right, Purdue, it's not going to hold up.
You know, Wisconsin's a little banged up coming into this game. Two of their top guards are questionable. John Dietz and Micah Capoy are both questionable, but so they've got a walk-on potentially starting at left guard in Jason Erdman. You know, they're one of their top receivers, Jazz Peavy, is going to be out. They're still without starting defensive end Chikwe Obasi, and a couple other guys. So, you know, obviously, you know, I think the Badger defense should be fine. But Purdue, you know, they're going to spread out a little bit more than, you know, the Badgers have seen in their previous games so far this season. So I obviously will be watching as a proud Badger alum, but I'm a little bit more worried about this game than I would really like to be. So anyway,
you got plenty of depth.
Yeah, we've got some depth, but you know, I'm still a little worried coming into this one. Anyway, time to get some spread formations. Coming into the week, Coach is still pacing us. He's 20-10 against the spread this season. Josh, over 500 at 16-14, and I am bringing up the rear 13-17 against the spread. We're going to start down in the SEC, where Auburn is 7-point favorites on the road at LSU. Josh, who you taking down there in Death Valley?
I have not trusted LSU at all this entire season, and I have been super high on Auburn. Auburn covers it easily. I set a 21-point game for Oklahoma. I'm tempted to go in that 17-21-point range for this one as well, even with it in Baton Rouge.
All right, Coach.
I think Auburn gets a 17-point victory. I think LSU holds serve at home for a while, and then Auburn just takes over with Kerryon Johnson. So yeah. I like the Tigers to cover.
I'm not sure why the spread is only 7. I was thinking it should be more somewhere around 10 or 11. So I'm obviously going to take I'll take the Tigers in this game. But
I think the Tigers will win.
Mm-hmm. Tigers of the Auburn variety. Our second game against the spread is a classic Big Ten matchup between Rutgers and Illinois. The Illini 2.5-point favorites at home. Josh, you're our Big Ten correspondent. How do you see this one going down?
So Illinois has been the perfect medicine to play against for struggling offenses, as they are 88th in the country in scoring defense. And I think every team in the Big Ten takes advantage of that defense, but Rutgers. Rutgers, they blew out Morgan State to help their overall points per game. But if you take that game out and just do their offense against FBS opponents, they're currently averaging 11 points per game. Their offense is absolutely atrocious. Illinois gets a big win. They win by at least a field goal.
And I know you liked what you saw out of Jeff George Jr.
Yeah, he had 3 interceptions. If he didn't have those, he actually had a really good game outside of those interceptions. He's got great.
If he didn't have those, he'd have to change his name.
Yeah.
Coach?
Jeff George Jr. doesn't have a mullet, I don't believe. He needs to grow a mullet.
I wonder if he holds I didn't remember to look if he holds the ball the same way as dad.
His dad held the ball in the strangest of all ways. Did he have his index finger on the point of the ball?
He did.
There was a quarterback. There was a quarterback that I think I was. He left after my freshman year of high school. He was the same way. He had it. He would put his hand. I tried to throw like that, and I threw freaking wounded ducks. Anyway, this game pits a stoppable force versus a movable object. As the old saying goes, I think Illinois is going to cover. It's going to be a pillow fight, but I do think the Illini are slightly better than Rutgers right now. So there you go.
Yeah. Sorry, Dad, taking Illinois in this one. Our next game, undefeated TCU, 6-point favorites on the road in the Little Apple, Kansas State. Josh, you know, can TCU keep their winning ways alive and beat the spread?
So I was super high on Kansas State when we were previewing the Big 12. They just haven't lived up to it. And I was looking at their schedule, trying to figure out where they got to have a vintage Kansas State upset. And this game kind of makes sense, but then the more you look into it, TCU, 7-point win, wake-up call. They're reading all those headlines after beating Oklahoma State. Get that wake-up call, tight victory. So I think Patterson will have them dialed in. The spread is only 6. If this was like a 14-point spread, I would love to take the Wildcats. But something is off about this Kansas State team, and I still think they can maybe get an upset somewhere along the way, especially maybe that Texas Tech game, because the Red Raiders are always so erratic, even though it is in Lubbock. But I'm just not confident enough this week. I'm going to go with the Horned Frogs.
Oh, TCU is rolling. Dude. They smell blood in the water. They see the light at the end of the tunnel for the Big 12 championship. They are very much in it, and they are very much going to tear down anybody in their way to get to it. And Kansas State is in the path, and I think they're in the path of destruction. I think they're going to just destroy and demoralize Kansas State. I think being 6-point favorites is actually kind of little low.
Yeah, I think it is too, especially because Jesse Ertz does not look like he's going to play for Kansas State. And without him, their offense is going to be really struggling. Give me the Horned Frogs. Next, we've got Washington State. Fresh off the solid victory at Autzen last week. They have to head, south for them again, southwest this time to Berkeley, where they are 15-point favorites on the road at the adopted team of Legal Motion, the Golden Bears. Josh?
We really liked Cal early, and we still think Wilcox is getting this team in the right direction, but their win against North Carolina, not very impressive anymore now that they're 1-5 on the year. Then they beat Weber State, an FCS team. Then they beat Mississippi, and we kind of were like, ooh, they beat an SEC team. Well, Mississippi's 2-3, and they've lost their last two, a combined 110-26. So I think the golden goose is what California is now. That goose is done. Like,
it's not laying eggs.
That golden goose is cooked. They're done. Wazoo steamrolls yet another middle of the road, if not lower, Pac-12 team.
Ooh, I agree with you, Josh. I think Washington State is on a freaking roll, and the Pirate is going to pillage. See what they're going to pillage Cal, and I think this video that I'm watching now is going to be more interesting than that game. There's a video I'm watching of the Georgia Strength Squad. They're celebrating Squattober, and they are squatting every seat in Sanford Stadium from the top all the way to the bottom. Every row, they do a squat all the way down from the top of the stadium to the field. It's insane.
Josh, I think at Berkeley, the goose is cooked, the fat is fried, and nothing is going to be overlooked until the Pirate is satisfied. Give me the Pirate and all of those 15 points on the road. I know it's a lot, but I think it's time, guys. We might have to jump off that Golden Bear bandwagon and hitch it somewhere else. Finally, it's time for biggest home dog of the week in the Power Five. Not Rutgers this week because they're at Illinois. Not Kansas this week. They're on the road. So for the second week in a row, we've got Ohio State on the road as big favorites. This time, 24-point favorites in Lincoln. That's a lot, but this Nebraska squad is not good.
No, and we talked about it when we recapped the Wisconsin game, that going from a 4-3 to a 3-4 is really, really hard. If you don't have a nose tackle, if you haven't recruited for it, it's not just taking your best down lineman and standing him up. There's so much involved in it. And Wisconsin, a good rush team, took advantage of that last week. 353 rushing yards, 7.2 yards per rush on 49 rushes. Well, Ohio State is more talented than Wisconsin and averaging 322 passing yards. So they are more balanced than Wisconsin, who has very little passing game currently. It's going to get ugly. And last year was 62-3. And I would say Nebraska is worse at this point than they were last year. And I would say even with losing to Oklahoma, Ohio State, to me, feels better right now than they did last year. It's going to be ugly.
Coach.
Yeah. Yes.
I think Nebraska fans might have to do the same things Griffin's doing during the game if they to get away from this massacre.
I know. It's going to be a mess, dude. It's going to be all Buckeyes are going to roll. They're going to shred some corn. They're going to shuck some corn, put it in the grinder, chop it up, eat it, and just destroy Nebraska. And they're going to demoralize them the whole way through. It's going to be ugly in Lincoln.
All right. Well, on that note, I think it's time for us to wrap up the show today. Josh, any final thoughts?
So we haven't been doing the crap as much this year as we had last year, but I just wanted to float this one out. Does anyone see trap potential NC State in a struggling Pittsburgh stadium a week before the bye and then 2 weeks before traveling to South Bend? Anyone see Dave Doran's team get a little trap situation?
No, I don't. I think this Pitt squad is bad. And I think that North Carolina State, they've already lost once this year. They know they can't afford to do it again. And they are, I mean, that defense is trying to play with some reckless abandon. I don't think Pitt is going to be able to move the ball on them enough. So, I don't know. I don't see any huge, huge trap games this week, but hopefully next week we'll find one or two. So I think that is going to do it for us here today on Illegal Motion. So on behalf of our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton here in Nashville, and our intrepid blogger from Big Ten Counting, Josh Cook, out there in the Second City, this is the Professor in Nashville saying so long and see you next time on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast.
One.
So long.
Two.
Thanks for listening to the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. To get in touch with the show, email us at illegalmotionpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @illegal_motion.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.